Okay, so we've got plenty of time to...
Do we? How long did that go? I wasn't even paying attention.
Half an hour or so.
All right, cool.
So, yeah, that's a great paper.
Thank you.
And so I'll open to...
I'd love to hear about the poem.
Before that, maybe I gave such a bad introduction where I didn't actually talk about your work.
Oh.
You've got a book coming out next year, Poetry, Modernism and Perfect World. Is this part of that project?
No, that I know a bit more about. No. I guess it's related. Yeah, I mean, actually, it's a lie. It does. It comes out of the conclusion. Maybe it would help to say the book is about the way in which some modernist poems, very narrowly defined, motivate devices that understood to constitute poetry, as, for instance, the line, lineation, as being complicit in the bad state of the world. And so it is about the way in which poems work with the concept of poetry. So I guess, yeah, it is related when I stop to think about it. The materials are very different, and I don't talk about Bourdieu or Lerner. Yep.
I disagree with Lerner's reading of Whitman, I think.
Sure.
I'm coming to this sort of recently, partly because I think when people read Whitman, they often focus on the myself part of song, of myself rather than the soul part.
Yep.
And when I look at his long lines, I hear him pushing into a sonics that's not only a
sure.
to deal with sound, and not the sort of straw dummy binary of poetry and prose that Lerner. He loves setting those binaries up and then knocking them over. So I wonder about the song.
Sure.
Song resonance of Whitman, of course, I always do.
Yep.
But what I wanted to ask, I sort of jumped up. I've been thinking about the allegorical and the literal before you came to your part of the paper about the literal.
Right.
And the figurative.
Mm.
And I'm thinking about legal allegory.
Mm.
Partly after Lena Junior visited and gave a paper on the poetry to emerge from the Occupy movement,
which
puts this fairly in that camp.
Mm. Mm.
So I'm wondering about the allegorical rather than the metaphorical in the sense that it... has an instructive capacity, but also in the sense that it operates in many temporalities or possibilities in the one instance.
Mm.
And I think that's where you were heading in the reading of Neil. And it really interests me because of my frustration with Lerner's capacity to set up a binary and then knock it over. What if, as you say, it's all operating simultaneously?
Or
is politics at work that is not just about the failure of the ideal, but about those things coinciding. So anyway, I wonder what you thought about the allegorical and whether it can be redeemed, to use one of the Lerner's words, in any way. But you're doing my homework for me because we are co-supervising the student on Lerner. So I'm,
oh, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
On the poems or the novels?
On both.
On both. Blimey.
I can pick your collegial brain, so I'm really grateful.
Look, I meant it when I said that I don't want to adjudicate about Bourdieu and Lerner. The Hatred of Poetry, the book by Lerner that I've been discussing, has many flaws. I think that it is occasioned some of the funniest and most hostile reviews. Ben Lerner's book. People have really objected to it, which I do find entertaining. I find it interesting that so many people have felt kind of viscerally attacked by the book. It seems to me not a strong enough book to get that bothered by. And actually, I do think that some of the attacks on Lerner have misunderstood his argument, but... it's a polemic. It's not an especially well-judged polemic. The use of the word hatred itself is wrong and doesn't fit his argument. And if I had a real problem with it, it would be that he essentializes what is historical. That is to say, I think it's perfectly legitimate to argue that that an ideal of poetry has operated and has been able to, or has allowed poems to be found wanting. But to say that it must necessarily do is the problem, I think. So the problem is when he ahistoricizes. That's kind of my feeling on Lerner. Now, as for the allegorical, why would the allegorical why would the allegorical allow a more complicated relation between instance and ideal than metaphor?
Partly because it exists as what it is in terms of the story of something other, but it points to many things outside of itself.
I see.
At the same time. And it may often come to an instructive point that can be quite nonsensical or deliberately reductive. So it interests me as a form that might have a lot of things running at the same time. It's not something that I've even less worked out on this than than you are on Ernest.
Do you mean a Benjaminian allegory? Is that where you are thinking?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's definitely under there. But I think there's something else too. I guess I'm thinking of it in the terms of political allegory and whether there's a point to such a thing.
Right.
Yeah, and if you're looking at the poet, it comes to this line, if we fail, it was by cruelty to each other. It's a bit like all of the questions of the allegory and then the moral of the story is. So
right.
I'm thinking about it in that way. I wonder what the relationship to the collective at work is in terms of the way this puts its propositions.
Right. I do think that the poem... the poem... Neelan's poem is constantly working back and forth between ordinary poetry and meta-poetry. So it's constantly reflecting on itself, referring to itself, reading itself. And so I can see your argument that that final line is a kind of... It provides a code for an allegory, right? Or you could interpret it that way, in the same way that earlier the introduction of a metaphor allows us to read a subsequent line as being also metaphoric and so on and so forth. The other thing I would say is that the reason I emphasized metaphor is that it is... probably not customary today, but historically, there are plenty of examples of metaphor being offered as the criterion for poetry, right? Whereas the same could not be said for allegory, as far as I'm aware, right? So that was why I was picking on lineation and metaphor, because they're both techniques which have been argued to be quintessential, right, to define poetry. So that's why I was interested in those. Because you couldn't say the same thing about allegory. I feel like I'm skirting the question, and it's probably because actually I don't know really whether my only thought really is that I suppose that if you went through the Trauerspiel book, if you took your allegory through Benjamin, then there would be a kind of messianism that had some form of utopian aspect, and that it would at the same time complicate unilinear temporalities, something like that, right? But that's sheer speculation.
I certainly don't need to put you on the spot.
No.
It came out as a really interesting thread.
Yeah. What other contemporary poems are you thinking of? We should turn this into a fact-finding mission for the better version of this that will turn up. What other contemporary poems are you thinking of when you turn to the concept of allegory?
I'm not really turning to it in a huge way, but I'm thinking about story as well. So I'm thinking about a real relation because of this scene of people who are recycling generations of interest in the politics of the subject of the lyric.
Yep.
And they're going, how else can we talk about this stuff?
Yep.
So in one hand I'm going, Lerner, is he just basically the volcano that did erupt at that time rather than the sort of doyen of a new form of thinking?
what is Lerner? And then I'm thinking about other work that is doesn't make these ambitious claims around the lyric subject at all.
Right.
Like Ali Kobiekeman, for example.
Right.
Who is able to run instructive themes of generational knowledge transmission.
Right. Yes.
Without stating that the politics applies to everybody, and yet it is cosmic. It is cosmic.
Right.
So anyway.
I see what you're saying.
Anyway, I think you should...
A better example for that then would be the poem in the book The Dial, where he's flicking through his Twitter and social media feeds in an airport somewhere while the Occupy movement is on, and all his old friends from Berkeley. I say he because at this point it's certainly autobiographical in some fashion, and it becomes, I mean, it, there's no reason not to think that it didn't happen,
yeah.
Though I'm sure it has been invented in various ways, and it becomes allegorical in that sense, right? Like that, this experience of a bit like Yeats and Edith's 1916, kind of invested in and interested in, but not actually quite there, becomes allegorical or more broadly representative through an autobiographical lyric, or a lyric that plays back and forth between autobiography and performance, or something like that. Is that a better answer? Yeah. Certainly, yeah. That would make more sense to me. That would be an easier part of the Neilan's collection to think about in terms of allegory, I think. Precisely because it's kind of a story, as you say.
Yeah. Someone like Carla Hamilton figured that
in there too. Okay.
Long, expansive.
You talked about both Bardieu and Lerner being interested in poetry and universality.
Yeah.
But don't they actually have completely opposite views? Lerner is actually really critiquing universality, isn't he? In his, when he talks about Claudia Rankine, and that was my reading of the essay, that he was really critiquing that whole idea of universality. So,
yes. I mean, the argument about Rankine is different from the argument about Whitman, it's true. And you might say that it's a kind of a too easy having it both ways. But isn't his argument about Rankine that it's impossible for a poem to reconcile the universal and the particular in a historical situation where they're not? That is to say, it'd be false for the poem to achieve this reconciliation when the world is unreconciled, rather than the universal in itself,
yeah,
whatever
so
that would be.
Doesn't that mean he's kind of critiquing the idea of universality?
Sure, if you like. Yeah. but not without being interested in it.
Oh, yeah, not without being interested, but I certainly got the impression he was quite anti the idea of universality. I haven't actually read the Bardieu, so I don't know, but
right.
Bardieu doesn't seem to say anything.
No, he's quite committed to his universals.
In your account of it. So
yeah.
I just thought Lerner was intervening in that. The other thing that
tell me.
Sort of interesting that reading it that way, but also, what do you really think he means by the hatred of poetry? Because is it like Andre Agassi saying he hates playing tennis? You wrote this biography. He's won all these tennis tournaments, but he hates playing tennis. Is it sort of when you're striving to be good at something or whatever? Is it just? It's always frustrating.
Like Lerner's dad. Call me sonnets.
Yeah.
Like just.
What is he really getting at? Because I find that quite. There seem to be two strands in the essay. There's a strand about sort of hatred of poetry, and there's the stuff about our ideals of poetry.
So I think hatred is just his bad word for our response to the gap between ideal and actual. It's not a good word for it. I don't know if it's his word or his publisher's word.
So
it makes a good title.
If you think of it that way, then it coheres a bit more with the rest of the essay.
That's right. So he's interested in frustration and dislike and a whole range of, more or less emotional responses to our ideas of poetry and actual poems. And he summarizes them with this word hatred. And it's probably not very helpful, and lots of people have objected to it. It occurred to me that one advantage of the word hatred for Lerner is that he can use the verb hates on, and hip his lingo by doing it that way. Dislike is not as punchy. I don't think that he has a better argument for the word hatred than that. But others might.
I remember hearing, I don't know who said it, maybe it's just the same, that Sydney is the city that San Francisco wishes it was. Maybe he's been hanging out in the Bay Area. maybe mortgage stress, traffic, but, you know, pretty nice beaches is utopia.
I'm trying to remember whether he... So he was here for our conference. Was that last year?
Maybe he arrived and this is pretty great.
Well, no, this was published before he came for our conference.
Let me ask that.
No, but so I was trying to remember whether he had said he had been to Sydney before. That's my point, but I can't remember. Anyway, go on, what's your question?
So I have questions from two sides. One is the historical claim, and the other is the ambit of for whom the situation applies.
Sure.
So, as I raise you every email, but the Meridian speech by Paul Celan seems to hit pretty much every single note in some form or other that is struck by Badiou and Lerner, particularly that which the absolute poem strives for is the utopian light. And where does this bring us? This thing brings us to the meridian, to an alignment with others. It could be argued, of course, that is a much more obscure piece of writing than either Badiou or Lerner, and that to designate its meaning in the way that their more discursive presentations puts it in a separate category of expression. But nevertheless, I wonder if you're gesturing to a moment that is, let's say, 1960 at least to now, or if it's now is repeating something from the past, or are we talking about late capitalism and Mongrel? That's the one. The other side is when it comes to the lyric, and this is touching on Kate's point in a different way, the word that I want to raise is metonymic rather than allegorical. Because I think what Kate kind of seems to be gesturing to, in my understanding of the logic of the question, is that for someone like Ali Kovyekinen, the relationship between the lyric I and the collective is not really imperiled in the same way. That making the connection isn't a radical gesture. It's more asserting it against a world that has tried to break that connection. And this is true, I think, of lyric expression in a lot of fourth world context.
Why is it metonymic exactly?
Well, I'll say what I meant. So a sense of the already collective nature of subjectivity.
I see.
For indigenous or in other ways, colonized groups. So that lyric could never... had to go through the notion of lyric or what it might correspond to, never has had to go through the individuation, and therefore the gesturing to the collective is not, like, radically, wow. So on the one hand, I just to summarise the question, on the one hand, what is the temporal boundary of the claim, which I understand is speculative, and on the other, the cultural boundary?
Limited, I would imagine. And quite possibly very. You could put it this way. So if my feeling about Lerner is that he essentializes what is really a historical tradition, then my feeling about Badiou is that the attitude to poetry is relatively independent of his philosophy, or that the philosophy doesn't fully account for his attitude to poetry and the way that he reads poems. And however new his philosophy might be, the attitude has plenty of historical precedence. So they are both, however self-consciously, part of a long line. And I was, I suppose, just curious that they had returned, if you want to put it that way, to this kind of metaphysics. And I suppose I was curious about why it might be that whatever is common between them should be felt to be true for them today. Why the return might feel right.
But would that be a return to something first enunciated in, let's say, the 1910 to 1960 period?
Oh, well before. Surely. I mean, Sidney, Shelley, there are a long tradition. If the historical aspect, I suppose, would not lie in only or primarily in arguing that this ideal of poetry is radically new, but rather that however new it is, whatever adaptations it might make of previous concepts of poetry, it puts old concepts to new use, something like that. And why? So it could be as much a matter of why do the old ideas still seem relevant, and the answer to that will be different for why they seem relevant for Shelley or Sidney or Heidegger or whoever.
They won't say relevant in 1990.
I don't know. Probably. Don't know. Simple answer. And as for culturally, yeah, I mean, it's a Frenchman and two Americans. They're all men. There are lots of problems with the selection. They all... The only kind of neat but superficial reason for triangulating them, I suppose, is that the Bedieu essay... I mean, I was talking about a whole bunch of Bedieu, but the essay on poetry and communism is a 2014 essay, I think, and so was Neilan's poem, and The Hatred of Poetry is probably 2015. So there's a kind of, you know, a narrow chronological coincidence. I was sort of interested in that. But I would be... again, to consider this a fact-finding mission, I would be interested in either further examples that might fit or further examples which don't fit, so as to turn the triangle into a better web. Does that help?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I see that it's a speculative working out rather than a...
Yeah, it's by no means intended as an...
In a way, those aren't answerable questions, but it's more what are the boundaries of the reaching out, I guess, or whether, how far does that reach go?
Yeah, it's not an exhaust...
I agree that the mood at the moment is post, you know, which coincides with Occupy, and there's a feeling that's common, and I see exactly... I have seen so much of it.
Yeah,
And the theoretical movement towards it started well before. I mean, what I find interesting sort of started in the undercurrent of anti-post-structuralist thinking in the late 90s, early 2000s. It kind of then, in a way, had its moment and the return of communism.
It coincides with the internet. I would put web technology in terms of mediating subjects in conversation with one another as forms of community, virtual or not, to be an important part of that.
Yeah.
It's funny, talking, Sean, I'm listening to the disavowal that Bedieu makes, that this is poetry, but it doesn't have to be about the poem. There's a kind of learner-esque, you could actually run a closer bow between their disavowal of certain objects in circulation, and instead of saying that they're arguing completely different things, because I think Bedieu is also, you know, I'll have my poetics, but I won't have my poem, you know, which is interesting. And I think Lerner's talking back to Shelley by a defence of poetry, the hatred of poetry. It's kind of...
Yeah.
Clear gesture that it's making.
Yeah. To go backwards. Yes, it's not the case, as I understand it, that for Lerner, the concept of poetry covers other sorts of objects.
Yeah.
For Badiou, it does, at least implicitly. So that he's able to say, for instance, in being an event that when Spartacus kind of, you know, rouses the slaves, this is an act of naming a truth, and so it is poetic, right? There's a poetry in this kind of political act. And that's poetry that doesn't require a poem because Spartacus didn't write a poem. So, which also means that when Badiou turns to other objects which he calls poems, some other criterion is at work in allowing him to label it a poem. So I'm interested in that. I'm sure you're right that the internet as a medium for forming communities is important. I'm sure that is right. I do wonder, one of the things that it took me a while to decide on heteronomy, and I was going to do, the plan had been to do a bigger survey of commune editions. That was really the thought, and then that became a bit hard, so I went back to heteronomy. But I would be interested in, and this may help to betray the limits of my thinking. I do suspect that there's a difference between the way in which certain kinds of experimental and or politically committed North American verse engages with these problems and the way certain kinds of politically committed or experimental British poetry does. So, for instance, I can't imagine Andrea Brady saying, or let alone Keston, saying, and in poetry, we can all go there. Like, no matter how ironized, the poems themselves would not want to invoke the concept of poetry. I don't think. I would need to check. I think that they would probably invoke the concept of poetry through the mediation of form. Right? They would do it in another way, through the technique itself. But that's sheer speculation.
One more question. Sorry. Very important. Oh, maybe two. Peter?
Nice question to go on.
Okay. Then.
I'm interested in what you were saying about the connection between poetry and communism.
Right.
Communism is really it's a social experiment, and it inevitably leads to a totalitarian regime. I grew up in a communist country, of course, but it does remind me of Kundera's Life is Elsewhere, about a poet and how excited he is by the revolution. And Chairman Mao, he's a brilliant, brilliant poet. He writes the best poetry. But unfortunately, under communist regime, poets are silenced, are put into prison. It happened in China, happened in Czech, in Hungary, in all these countries. And in 1976 or 77, when China started to have democratic movement, it started with poetry. There is a war. There was a war. It's called War of Democracy, and people were putting their poems on it. And after Chinese Cultural Revolution, the Cultural Revolution stopped, there was a flourish of poetry. There were so many poets, and just on internet, and the communist, it can become a huge intranet. So, anyway, that's my view about the connection.
Right. Yes. You and Badiou would struggle to see eye to eye. There are a few reasons.
He's a Maoist.
He's a Maoist. That's right. He's a Maoist.
Actually, if I can link that in part of my question.
Please do.
Shows that poetry can make things happen, counter to order.
Right.
Which I think is one of the other perhaps subtext in this idea of hatred the sense right. of the poetry. But, you know, poetry makes nothing happen, it's just frustrated art.
Right.
So that's just a myth within certain cultures.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would say in relation to the communism that one of the slippery moves, as I understand that Badiou makes, is firstly to define communism in a pretty abstract sense as an interest in what is common to all. So he's not talking about Marx or Stalin or Mao. But then, without explaining the shift, to turn to poets who were explicitly committed to, you know, historical examples of communism. So you have to be careful, I think, when interpreting Badiou's arguments about communism. He's on the one hand a Maoist, but on the other hand, his communism is not... it's not shorthand reference for... the historical examples of communism, put it that way.
Okay, well, that's a great paper and great question.
Oh, thanks, Anthony. Now we can have lunch.
Yeah. So we have lunch and we're reconvening for the rest of the podcast website.
Maybe some of that tension is in there.